All right, let's go ahead and get started. It's 3:16, 3:17, so let's go. Good afternoon. I hope everyone's feeling good this afternoon. It looks like there's some lunch coma things happening here. We'll try to make it exciting and fun for you as much as we possibly can. My name's Craig Kitterman. I'm a product manager in the Windows Azure team in Microsoft, and I'm here with Yohai Kiriati, and he's one of the senior program managers in the Windows Azure Websites team. So together we're going to share with you a little bit more about the Windows Azure Websites and look a little bit deeper into the technology, show you what's under the hood, how this thing actually works, how it ticks, and Yohai will dig down and show you the actual architecture of the machines and some of the software that really makes this thing work. And then we'll show you some demos throughout the way to actually demonstrate some of the cool capability around scaling and also at the beginning here how easy it is to actually get a few things up and running. How many of you had the ability yesterday to go to Bill Staples' introduction session on Windows Azure Websites? Okay, just a handful. So for you guys, the first 15, 20 minutes is going to feel a little redundant because I want to make sure we do a little bit of an introduction, an overview of what the actual offering is and what the product can do, just so that we're all on the same page. And for those of you that didn't get there, hopefully this crash course will be sufficient into what we're talking about in the latter part of the talk, and then of course we're going to open it up for Q&A at the end. So let's go ahead and get started. As I mentioned, we're going to cover an overview. Then later we're going to go into the architecture, different configurations of Windows Azure Websites, and at the end talk about scale. But throughout the talk we're going to pepper in some demos to actually show these things and help you understand how they actually work and what to actually do if you want to take advantage of these various capabilities. So what is Windows Azure Websites for the folks who didn't get to go to the session yesterday? It's about websites in seconds, as powerful as you need them to be. It sounds like a lot of marketing talk, and it is. But really what that means is you have the ability to start very simple. We have a simple free offer to get up and going with Windows Azure Websites. You get 10 free website instances, and it takes just literally seconds once you've got an Azure account established to create new Windows Azure Websites and start interacting with them, deploying applications and doing things with your new website instances. It's about being brilliant with your programming language, your framework, your runtime of choice. So Windows Azure Websites supports ASP.NET, as you might imagine, as you might expect. We also have great support for Node.js and PHP as part of the offering. And we can definitely see a future where this continues to evolve and support even more languages and runtimes, et cetera, as there's a lot of things out on the web that folks want to use. And last but not least, once you're sort of done your development, you're using the tools and languages and runtimes that you'd like, you need that thing to get live and you want it to be an easy and smooth and quick experience. So Windows Azure Websites allows you to deploy your live sites in seconds, as well as the ability to monitor and manage those websites in a very nice dashboard, a very nice UI. And when the time comes to actually scale those sites, those applications, we have a very simple and straightforward way to scale those applications, to increase your application performance, and be able to take on even more users as your site and your business grow. So that is sort of the core tenets of Windows Azure Websites. So let's get into it. I'm just going to show you for the next 15 minutes or so just a simple Windows Azure website and how to get up and running with a few different aspects of the service. So let's go ahead and do that. So what I've got here is the new Windows Azure Management Portal that we released last week. All of the services, including Windows Azure Websites, are in a preview form today. So what that means is we have limited SLAs associated with those, and it's really a time for people to get in, try out the technology, give us your feedback, and help us to improve that. And then later this year, we will go into general availability where sort of everything's in, you know, commercial grade sort of service, and SLAs will all come into play at that time. So we invite everyone to come get started for free and preview and really see what the technology can do for you and how you're going to think about using it in your business, and then let us know what we need to do to make it a better experience. So I'm in the portal. I'm on the websites tab here. I don't have any websites created. So what I'm going to do first is look at a website I've got on my local machine here. This is just a very simple app that I've got running in WebMatrix. And I'll just run the app to show you what it does. It's a very simple app that does one thing. It reports how slow the ski line is going at the ski resort. So we have two buttons here, running smooth or I'm stuck. And what we can do is actually run this in, let's say, a mobile emulator. And you can get the idea here. This is just a very simple app that if you have your iPhone and you're at the ski resort, you can say, oh, the line's slow or it's running fast. And then you can notify other people sort of how it's going. Okay, so it's a very simple app. It has a very simple database schema, as you might imagine. And so what we're going to do is actually publish this to Windows Azure. So the first thing we need to do in Windows Azure is actually create a database for this application. So to do that, I'm simply going to click New, SQL Database. I'm going to do a quick create, and then I'm just going to give it a name. Let's call it Resort Traffic Collector DB. I've already got a SQL, Windows Azure SQL database server created. So if I didn't already have that, I would just simply click Create New Server, give it a name, and within seconds, I'd have a new logical server. And then I'd go do this step. But I've already done that, so I've already got a server. I'm just going to say OK. And within just a few seconds here, Windows Azure has actually provisioned a brand new database for me that I can interact with as any logical SQL Server database using the tools that I'm used to using. And so now that I've got this database, let's drill into it a little bit and look at the dashboard view. And this gives me some information here about my database that I just created. And what I'm actually going to do now is go and manage that database. I need to first open some firewall rules to allow the portal to actually be able to interact with that database. By default, the database is locked down, and you have to open all the IPs that you want to be able to access the database. And so I just had to click through a little bit there to make sure that I can now use this management tool to interact with my database. So what I'm going to do is log into my database here and create the schema for my app. And so I've got here a little simple script that will create the schema. So all I do is log into this SQL Azure, which will be renamed Windows Azure SQL Database Management Tool, and I can simply run the script against that. So let's see, it looks like I'm having a problem connecting to it. Let's try it again. So with any luck, I will connect. And in the meantime, while that's going, let's actually create the second part of our application. So what we're going to do is take this little application that reports traffic density at the ski line, and there's a second part of the application that actually shows you a report. Is it going fast or slow? And what we're going to do is take that report and embed it into a WordPress blog. So let's go create a WordPress blog now. So to do that, all I need to do is, again, click New, Website, From Gallery. And what you're seeing now is the open source application gallery that is part of Windows Azure Website. So you'll see a number of popular open source based applications in here, some based on ASP.NET, some based on PHP. And you have the ability to simply click on one of them, and Windows Azure will install that in your new website for you. So let's select WordPress in this case. And let's give it a URL of my ski blog. And I'm going to create a new MySQL database. We also have MySQL database support as part of Windows Azure, and this is being delivered by a partner of ours called ClearDB. So you'll see when I continue down the path here, I get to name my new database, and I don't really care. I'll just take the default. You can call that whatever you'd like. And I accept the terms of ClearDB, who is our database partner, and click the checkbox button here. And my WordPress site will begin the provisioning process. Now let's click back over here and see if I got into my SQL database. Looks like I did. So let's go ahead now and paste in this this little SQL script, which will create the schema for my application. And now if I run this application, actually let's look at the web.config in my application here, and you'll see It's connected to my new SQL database that I just created. So let's go back into the SQL database here, and I'll show you how I know that. So when I click on Show Connection Strings, it will just give you a list of all the connection strings for popular languages that you can just go drop right into your code. So as soon as you create that database, just go grab the connection string, drop it into your code. And the ADO.NET one here has this at traffic collector user at that server. And because I had already created my server, I was able to go and update the connection string in my app already. So if I run this app now locally and I click running smooth, it's not erroring. If it was not actually recording the database, it would error. And if I go to the report, let's try this. I'm just running it again from Web Matrix. I don't know why all of a sudden my URL bar is right justified, and I can't type in there. Never seen that before. Okay, we'll leave that alone for now. So anyway, my application is now running locally. It's connected to that new SQL Azure database. So now I want to take the application, this traffic reporting application, and push it into my new Windows Azure website. So what I'm going to do here is create a new Azure website. This one is my ski blog, my WordPress is up and running. Let's leave that alone for a moment. And I'm going to create a new website for the traffic reporting app. I'll just do a quick create. And in order to push from Web Matrix into my new web application, my new website, I simply need to click on it and download the published profile. So I click on it, I get into the dashboard view, download published profile, save that to my local machine. And what this is doing is downloading all the publishing settings that I need to actually push that code up into Windows Azure websites. That includes the URL, the login, all the credentials. And now all I need to do is import that published settings into Web Matrix or Visual Studio and then click publish, and it'll automatically push all of my code. So we'll go ahead and do that now. I'll say import published settings. And make sure I get the one that I just downloaded here. And you'll see it automatically populates this form with all the credentials I need in order to push my app. I click save. And now publish. The first thing it's going to do is do some compatibility checking to make sure that all the code in my application can run on Windows Azure websites. And then it's going to determine the changes. So what's the net changes of all the files in the app versus what's live? So if you do multiple publishes, it does this sort of delta analysis and will only push files that have changed since the last publish. So let's go ahead and continue. It did the delta, and you'll see down here on the bottom this little yellow bar that says it's starting the publishing process. And within just a few moments here, it will have pushed all of those. So now you'll see the URL, rather than being localhost, is now trafficreporting.azurewebsites.net. So if I click on that, I've now got this same reporting app up and running in Windows Azure Websites, still pointing to that same SQL database that we created in the cloud. So this is kind of cool. Maybe not, but let's go ahead and look at it on the mobile device. So I've just got a little iPhone emulator down here. And just paste in that live URL, and you'll see it loads. And I can say I'm stuck or I'm running smooth. And now if I want to actually look at the report, I just change that to report, and I get a little meter that says, okay, more people are saying they're getting stuck than moving along. And so I have all the ability to do that from my phone. But now let's go back over to our WordPress blog that we created, and let's just embed this this report in the WordPress blog. So I have a ski blog. And we need to quickly go through and finish the WordPress publishing process. So if you've ever used WordPress, you know, you install the application, and then you go through a couple of quick screens. And what WordPress then does is actually goes into MySQL and configures and sets up all the tables in MySQL. So this is the standard WordPress experience. I say install WordPress. And this can sometimes take a couple minutes, but it seems to have been pretty fast earlier today, so let's hope that it's pretty fast. Basically, it's creating all those tables, and now I can log in and administer my new WordPress site. So let's go ahead and change the appearance, and let's change the header. I've got a cool ski image here somewhere. I think it's in downloads, ski resort. I want my ski blog to look sort of ski-like. So we'll go ahead and update that. And now I'm going to create a new post. And let's just paste in some HTML here. And basically what I've got here is just an iframe with some HTML in it. And I need to put the actual URL of my new report app here. So let's go grab that. If I go back over to my traffic reporting, I can grab the DNS name of my app here and drop that into my WordPress post, but I want to do the slash report because that'll actually show me the final report. Let's publish that. And now in my ski blog, I have a nice ski blog with an embedded graph that tells me what's going on and if people are getting into the line or not and if they need to turn around and go home or if it's actually a good day to ski. So as you can see, with just just about 10 minutes or less, I was able to provision a database, brand new SQL database, create a new website that is a traffic reporting application that is sort of mobile ready using WebMatrix, publish that application, install WordPress and configure it, and embed that application all together using Windows Azure websites. So hopefully that's kind of a quick, interesting overview that shows some of the breadth of capability of the product and what you can do. Obviously, there's a lot more you can do and a lot more applications and different ways to mash those things up, but hopefully this gives you a little bit of a feel for what that looks like. So let's go back over to the slides here. And right now, I'm going to hand it over to Yohai, and he's going to walk us through what actually makes this work. There's a lot going on under the covers, and I think it's worth an explanation. So, Yohai. You need the clicker here.
Probably. So, thanks, Rick. Thanks a lot. Good demo. Yay. Yeah, wake up, some guys. So it's wonderful to see all of you here, so scattered. Far away, but that's okay, we'll manage that. So this is the clicker. How do I go back? Okay. So just before we actually go into the how this thing works, I would like to ask a few questions to the audience. And to begin with, to get some background on you guys. So how many of you are actively managing IIS servers, farms? Okay. From those who are, how many of you are managing like more than 100 apps on those? Okay. Fair enough. So yeah, the dude over there, it's like the only person. Okay. Good for you, first of all. Are you having fun doing that? Oh, yeah. Okay. So when we came into do this, basically, so we were thinking about management experience and how does everything will fit in, because eventually we have to run on existing infrastructure. We're running on Windows Azure. We're running on Windows Server 2008, R2, and we're using IIS and so forth, IIS 7.5. So coming into that, we had to figure out exactly how to enable the management experience for thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of sites across all of Windows Azure websites. So just to get a feel, the rest of the guys are web developers? Okay, most of you. Cool. So that will be interesting for you guys, I hope. And we can figure out exactly how this thing works. So to start with, when we came into this, as I said, we're looking at a way to improve the management of the Windows Azure websites or the infrastructure beneath it to enable this, you know, quick creation and deployment and provisioning of site that everything just works and really, really quick in terms of something else that exists today with Windows Azure or with IIS. So one of the first things that you come to realize is that, unlike, and not that IIS is not a good product, it's a super great product, but unlike like IIS, the way it's being configured and built, we are more focused on a cloud versus server. So we're moving from a server-centric into a cloud-first design. And what that means is that when you figure out all the little things that you need to change, and you can work around the kind of existing limitation and restriction that you have with IIS, then you come up with the ideas to be able to allow you basically to go into the cloud and very easily manage, you know, large scales across many different scale units or many different servers. We'll see a couple of examples shortly. So, you know, once you go and you realize that, what you can do, then one of the first thing we've done is basically base the entire configuration and management of this thing on a SQL. And there are a few things that help us with that. And the important is that if you look at IIS and you guys managing IIS or SharePoint or any of that, when you go into a hoster or your own IIS, when you drop the files, when you're deploying your sites, when you're managing active sites on IIS, basically it's mostly file-based. And all of that is great, but when you come to manage a lot of sites, it's kind of a pain. And when you're starting to talk about site configuration and site deployments and all that, then it also has a performance impact. Therefore, when you move to SQL, it basically frees. It allows us to be a lot more dynamic. We can change things on the fly. It allows us to provision many sites across many different servers. So as I said, with SQL, basically, we now can dynamically provision sites. So we have a site, and as Craig created a couple of those just in his demo, he basically went into this Windows Azure, he went to this portal, he created a site, so I got provisioned eventually and then ran. In order to do that, we had to kind of do some fundamental changes to the way we do provisioning on IIS, and we have rigged the infrastructure in such a way, again, also using the SQL database configuration, to be able to dynamically deploy sites. And it's a good thing, because you're running on VMs, and you don't know when something will happen to that VM, like the disk would explode, or just the VM come offline. And when we automatically detect that, we can actually take the site or the workload that was on running on that one VM and basically stick it into a different one, as easy as just provisioning a site. So that's another good thing that happened with that. Obviously, we have a site, and you're all web developers. And with Windows Azure websites, when you're coming into develop web, we just basically use the share as you would expect with any regular Windows development. There is no need to use the Windows Azure SDK to work with storage or anything like that. We basically abstract everything for you. So obviously, we need to work with storage. And by doing this abstraction to work with Windows Azure X Drive or Cloud Drive, we basically abstract all of the above in terms of file system, and we work about over SAN or NAS or any of those. So again, the goodness in that is basically you need to have this capability if you want to be able to run at scale and if you want to dynamically move sites between different workloads. The site itself, in terms of the web server that we have, the web server is pretty dumb in terms of he doesn't really know anything except running a site. Whatever we tell them to run, whichever site we tell them to run, he happily runs. He goes into the database, gets some configuration and information file, but other than that, he knows nothing, which is a good thing, because then we can bring in and out machines, and we can bring in and out sites as well. And on top of all of that, we have a way to do our load balancing. Again, we have many different workers or web servers, and in front of those, we have a load balancer. And our load balancer is smart enough to be able to understand exactly which server to route the request, which site is running on which server, and if there are new requests, be able to balance load between all the servers and so forth. So I think the easiest way for us to be able to understand exactly how this thing works and what you want to do with it is basically go into some schema and see how it goes. So when you're running your site on a Windows Azure website, basically your site can be in two states. Either it is running right now, which means it's being provisioned to a web server, it's in memory, and it's serving requests, or it's not running, meaning it's not being provisioned, it's not in memory, and it's not allocated to any server. Knowing that, the following example will actually explain how the process will flow and how the system reacts when there is a request coming in for a site. So first request comes in, hits the Azure Load Balancer. This is the blue thingy. And Azure Load Balancer simply redirects or forward the request, sorry, to our load balancer, which is basically just IIS ARR with some modifications. So IIS ARR gets a request for foo.com, and IIS looks at it at himself, it looks at foo and says, dude, I don't know what's foo. I have no idea who is foo and where it came from. So he goes and asks the database. Goes into the database, trolls, and looks for foo. And then the database basically replies to him, hey, here is foo, here's all the information you need to know. And about who is foo. Also, we provide some information about which servers are busy, which servers are less busy, and basically make a decision together where to actually deploy, where to provision foo. We then forward the request to the specific web server that we want to, that we make a decision where we want to run it. And that web server now actually going to a provisioning state. It goes against the database, get some information, get some site configuration, get the data, understand where are the paths, where are the files, and basically copy everything you need to run into locally into the web server, and then serve the request, which actually talk against the storage controller to get some data, you know, your files, your images, your source code, your images, whatever you have when you write back logs or write back something or whatever you use, goes against the storage controller, who then again against Azure Cloud Drive. And the last one is this, we have like a website database. Again, like Craig showed, both SQL Azure and MySQL, and then the web server also know how to talk against those database, and simply process the request moving forward, and then returning the request to the web browser who actually committed the send a request. So this is a flow for a cold site. It basically happened once, let's say, depends on how, but for the first request, if your site is not running, this is what you would expect. And then for, let's say, the next request that comes in, your site is already active, and what we call it, it's hot already. So it's loaded in memory, and it can serve requests, so the flow is a lot better. When the first request comes and hits the ARR, this time ARR actually is more familiar with your site, so he knows which web server or web servers your site is running at, and basically he will redirect to the right server. We did a bunch of work behind the scenes to manage. We embed some cookies within the replies. If you look at Fiddler at the header, you're actually going to be able to see those. We tried to create some stickiness between, so it will be easier for the developer to maintain session based on a single machine, but we don't guarantee that. So as I said, ARR remembers where to route, and you simply route the request to the appropriate web server. And at that point, it's the same thing as before. Web server simply calls, we talk with the storage, talk with the database, fulfill the request, and return the response back. And also, subsequent requests actually will hit either the same server or servers, depends how did you configure your server. Okay, so we got cold, we got hot, we understand how these two works. The next thing I want to cover is if we'll go through and actually meet all the players that are taking part in this. And we'll work and we see, so we've met the IRR, we have seen our ARR. This is the one. Yes, we've seen ARR, we've seen the web server. Storage controller basically is our abstraction or our way to abstract the way that that behind the scene we're actually using Azure storage. So the website doesn't have to use anything or know anything about Azure storage, just use as a regular share UNC path. But we behind the scene actually abstract all that. And all of these are all the orange ones are basically using Windows Azure worker role. So we are just this, whatever we are showing in here, as a deployment, just deploy another tenant on Windows Azure. To continue, we have our runtime database, which is the database in which we maintain the state of all the workers, the state of all the sites, configuration data, runtime data, monitoring data, resource data, and a bunch of other stuff. We also have the websites database and databases, and those could be either SQL Azure, MySQL, and probably in the future some more databases will join the party as well. We got the Cloud Drive, which is Windows Azure Cloud Drive, and as I said, we simply, with the storage controller, completely abstract everything in between those. We got our API front end, which is basically API to the entire stamp, or unit of scale, as we call it. We'll see it in a second. And we do have an API. It's not really well documented right now, but it exists. You can actually hit it. And obviously, the portal will work with this API, and you will be able in the future to work with this API and be able to script it and dynamically create, deploy sites, manage sites, and configuration, and so forth. We also have a deployment server. And the deployment server, or servers, basically host FTP, web deploy, and allow you to, as Craig did a couple of times during the session, basically deploy the sites. You go in. If you use FTP, you can actually go through these sites and throw the entire, you can go through this server and basically see all your sites. And this is give or take how everything is connected. So the nice thing about deployment that I wanted to share with you a story is yesterday I took a plane. I came in yesterday. I took a morning flight from Seattle. And is David in here? David Mendel? No? Anyway, so I sit in my in my seat on the plane working on the slides. And the dude next to me, his name is David, and he goes and asks, hey, are you working for Microsoft? And I say, yes. Are you working on Windows Azure website? And I say, yes. He said, then very nice. Thanks. He saw it last Thursday when we announced it. It's very cool and so forth. And then he asked, maybe you can help me with something. And I said, sure. And the dude pulls a laptop, put it on his, you know, on his lap or whatever, flip it on, turn it on, and then he runs Windows 8. I swear, it's not Microsoft. He runs Windows 8. He runs Dev 11. And he connects to the Wi-Fi on the plane. And together, we go ahead and deploy to Windows Azure websites, fixing some of the problem he had with his site, deploying it, and making it work, all from a plane at about 36,000 feet, which is kind of cool. David is not here to share the story, but it's too bad. And then when I land, I turn on my phone, very happily going to send the note to all the guys back at home, thing and how cool it was. And then I read the email about Scott's demo, if you notice, some of the deployment failed, so it's kind of what's in between. But anyway, all of a long story, everything hits a deployment server, and everybody are happy about that. Let me get to this for now. Cool. So where's the clicker? So the next step is to, after we saw the big players and understand, behind the scene with the web server, we have some more component within the web server that makes our life a little bit easier. So to begin with, when you deploy your websites and your website, when it runs in a W3 WP process, which is basically just another Apple, right? So if you guys are developing, you're running this, you're familiar with this. So it's regular. You can run whatever you want. The nice thing about it is that we allow you to run in full trust. So you can run full trust application within your Windows Azure websites. We also have something we call DWAS, which is Dynamic Web Activation Service. If you guys are running or managing your IIS, you will notice that in regular IIS, you have WAS, which is Web Activation Service. We added a little D in front of it and make it dynamic. This is a little piece of technology that basically allow all the magic to happen on a single server in terms of dynamic provisioning and moving in and out sites. We'll get to that in the next slide. We also have metering and monitoring capabilities on each server, and this basically reports the health of the server, reports the health of a site, usage information about site, statistic about the server, and so forth. All goes back into the database, and behind the scenes, again, when there are requests coming in and out, and we can do some load balancing, so all this information is being aggregated, and we can actually do something useful with that. Cool. So just to make sure that we are all on the same page here. So if this is basically a block diagram of and it's kind of abstract and it's hard to see, behind the scenes when we actually go ahead and deploy this, it looks pretty much like that. If I can click it. So this is to press on 4, right? 4. So this is the old management portal for Windows Azure. It's a Silverlight. And what I'm about to show you here is basically a stamp. A stamp is a scale unit, is what we call it. How many of you are working with Windows Azure today, have worked and been working before and so forth? OK, only a handful as well. So basically, you are familiar with those. For those who are not familiar, this is the Silverlight management portal for Windows Azure. This is like in production right now. And the preview with the HTML one is also in production, but this is what we'll like to use for now, just to emphasize and see what we have. So basically, what we're seeing right here is, for example, this is our the web worker role is basically our web server. So we have web servers, we have some dedicated servers, we'll see that in a second. We have controllers, which are API front end. We have the file server, which are storage servers. We got the front end, front end, which are ARR. We got publisher role and so forth. So this is basically a small development test environment. And if you look at the other one, it's a little bit better. Still not perfect in terms of size. But if you look like at the small dedicated, for example, so we got about 50 servers around here that we can actually use and so forth. So just to show you that behind the scene, we are the Windows website servers behind the scene is just a regular Windows Azure tenant. You can deploy your stuff into that. And it's pretty cool because we are basically using Windows Azure as any client or any other customers. And the thing works, and pretty exciting in terms of what are the capabilities that we can have. Which one is the one? Eight, for future references. So if we go back into the Windows Server itself, so as we said, we have the DWAS, which is Dynamic Activation Service. And over there, we can control the site activation and deactivation of the site. So when requests come in, DWAS basically, the decision to host or to provision the site on a given server has been made. So DWAS, all you need to do is basically go against the database and get some of the website data and basically report back monitoring and statistics. So I kind of simplified this, but we'll see in a demo in a second. DWAS basically takes all your application, all your files from what you deploy, your site files, your source code, your content, and so forth, configuration file, and basically take them and put them locally on the machine, compiles, and they have to run on whatever has to run. Any changes you made to the share are being propagated. There is a change notification that actually flows through the system. So anytime you deploy a change, you change your web config, everything actually being propagated again to DWAS, and he is being updated. DWAS is also enforcing quota in shared mode. Basically, you're running as one site from across multiple tenants. So you have many, many sites running on a single server, and you're running in a shared environment. You have to play nice. So we are kind of enforcing some of that in terms of quota enforcement. We also have a monitoring agent. Basically monitor resource consumption, monitors errors and log. He's also responsible for aggregating all the logs that you could have, like IIS log and detailed error logs and so forth. And we can see the monitoring information coming in. As I said, everything works with the database. Now, what is the next part? Demos. Okay, so we've talked enough, spent about 20 minutes on the slides to understand how this thing works. So one other thing I wanted to show you is what is the goodness of actually being able to dynamically provision site, dynamically load them and run them, have all the configurations sit in the database. What goodness does it give you? So I have a fairly simple website over here. I'll show you the code. I'll load this for now, refresh, go back to the code. So the code is like basically the template, default file create new ASP site. And what I do here is simply go through all the current configuration settings that I have, all my application settings, have within my webconfig file, and I just print them out. Fairly simple. If I go to my webconfig and I scroll down, I have two values, which is site title and site prefix, and just to make sure that we understand where they're coming from, I added from webconfig to them. So this site has been already deployed. It spare you the create new and deploy because you've seen it several times. So basically, here is the site. You can refresh, and everything is happy. And these are the two titles that we have, which is cool. So if you are developing a site and you have like a connection string, you put it in the webconfig. If you have some other configuration parameters which are generic to your site, you put it in the webconfig. Next time you want to make some change, you need to crack open your code, check it in, have a code review, God forbid. Go ahead, deploy it, FTP, web deploy, whatever, and figure out whatever is going, if this goes on or not. So one of the things that we've introduced with Windows Azure websites is if I go to this management portal and make sure that I'm using the right app from all the apps that I got. So if I go to this application, which is running, which is AM2, which is on AM and using appconfig as a funky name, this is just my way of actually keeping track of all the sites that I have. If I go to the configuration tab, I see a bunch of stuff that I can configure for the site. So I can choose the frameworks. As you can see, I can run on, I can choose the .NET framework, I can choose the PHP frameworks. I can basically custom my host name. This feature is not available in shared mode, but it does if you go into reserved instance. I can turn on and off diagnostics. And so basically the HTTP logs, I can turn on and off diagnostic and log, so I can enable HTTP logging and detail error logging and so forth. One of the other things I can do is basically go ahead and add up settings. So this is dynamically enables you to define a key, like let's say key one, and define a value, like let's say value one. I can hit the save, or I can actually approve that. This little indication showed me that it's not saved yet. There is a little save icon here. I can click the save icon. Go ahead, save, being update, no more save icon. And basically, if I go back to my application now, I can hit the refresh. And you see the site takes a second to understand what happened because in the background, we have changed the configuration. So we have appended this to the web config magically. And voila, you actually have it right now, and you can use it. So the nice thing about it, that if you, let's say, want to embed your database connection string in a web config, so if you put it in a web config just as it is, people usually either do something to encrypt the password or don't. So either or, it's in the web config, and it's added to the problem that if you want to change stuff in the web config, you have to basically have a new version of your app because you're changing application code. Here, because we're using the DWAS technology and we keep the site configuration in the database, we can actually merge between the web config information that comes from your web config, sorry, the application setting for your application that comes from the web config you've deployed, and the one that actually are in the database and are managed with, being managed with the portal, which is kind of cool. Gives you all kind of dynamic and change because you can actually change on the fly those things without having to change code or redeploy. Yay. No, yay? Okay. Okay, so you've seen that, and now.
Thank you, Yohai. We'll come back to Yohai in just a few minutes for another cool demo. So it wouldn't be cloud, of course, if we didn't talk about scale. Windows Azure Websites is really cool because one of the things it gives you is the ability to scale your site by literally taking a slider bar and moving it across to the number of instances of your application that you'd like. We have two types of scaling. Let's first talk about shared instance scaling. So as Yohai mentioned, you have those W3WP worker processes that are running on your web server. And when you have a website that is running in that shared pool, basically you're a single tenant within a web server that's running multiple websites. So there's lots of other, see the green one is our website, and all the other ones are sort of other people that are running there. If I want the ability to service more requests, I can simply go drag that slider bar to 2, and then I get another instance of my site running on a separate server, but again, it's in a multi-tenanted cloud. So there should actually be a little line in the middle of this to show that it's actually running on 2 different servers. But you can see by the little arrows pointing down that that's the case. So is every time I drive that drag that slider bar, I get another instance of my site spun up on another multi-tenant environment on a separate virtual machine somewhere under the hood. And that gives me the ability to service more requests, but doesn't necessarily increase the overall performance of my application. And I'm still subject to sort of the idiosyncrasies of being in a multi-tenanted environment because I have other applications that could be consuming resources on the same VM that my app happens to be on. So we have the other, we have the ability also to allow you to scale to reserved instances. So as soon as you go to reserved instance, what happens is a new virtual machine gets provisioned by Windows Azure, and your application gets moved over to that dedicated reserved instance, and you effectively get to consume all of the resources that are allocated to that VM. And the nice thing is, I can do the same thing. I can now go drag that slider bar to some other number, and what will happen is Windows Azure will automatically provision a new VM for my application, copy that application code, set up the load balancing scheme across all the instances of my application, and does all that for me in just a matter of seconds. So you initially have the ability to change the overall application performance and service more requests the further out you scale. When you do this, you also have the ability to decide on which size of instances you'd like, which is effectively the specs of the VM that are going to be provisioned for you. So you can use small, medium, and large instance sizes, and they have specs that you can see in the portal when you select from the drop-down box. I'll actually just show you what that looks like here. Okay, Yohei will actually show you that later as part of the scale demo. So once you are in reserved instance mode, if you're managing a lot of applications, you can actually now take advantage of those reserved instances and put more applications on those reserved instances. But because you're the owner of those instances, they'll only be your applications. So you can sort of set up your own very simple multi-tenanted environment with on those reserved instances, but you have the ability to control and monitor those applications to make sure they don't interfere with one another, whereas in shared instances, you're sort of at the mercy of your noisy neighbors in those shared instances. So this is a great way if you're deploying a lot of applications, you want to have a very simple, unified process for doing that, but you want to have real tight control over the resources that are allocated to those applications and sites. This is a great way to get there. So I'll hand it back to Yohei now to go through a pretty cool scale demo.
Cool. Thank you, Craig.
Yep.
Let's go here. So as Craig mentioned, we have scaled and reserved instance. And actually, just let's go through that and figure out how the thing works. So already, as before, I have a couple of sites. Those are actually different sites. You'll be able to see that. One of them is called Scale 2, and the other one is called Scale 1. And actually, they are Scale 1 is part 2 and so forth. So it's kind of reversed, but that's OK. So I got a site here. And this site, I've already deployed some content, although old content, but it's a content. And I got some blogs and images and so forth. And supposed to have images. And what we will do right now is basically, this is a site. Let's reset and let's start here. So this is the management portal for Scale 2 in blue. And if you've seen, I ran some of the stress testing before as preparation for this demo. And what we're going to do now, this is, if we go to the Scale tab, it's running in shared, and it has 3 instances. So let's scale those down into a 1 instance and save that change because we want to slowly show how it graduates. So this is the default, basically, when you create a new site. You get into a shared, you get a single instance, and when your site runs, it runs on a VM, on a web server, sorry, and that web server runs your site plus some other site, as Craig shown. And depends on the, we have a lot of web servers, so we have a bunch of capacity, but at some point we'll get traffic into those sites, and you have many, many sites running, and your application will have some of the resources allocated per site, or some of the resources of that VM allocated to your site. So if I go to the app itself, this is the application, fairly simple with some bunch of content. What I wanted to show you is, let's go back to the monitoring for a second. Let's do 6 hours so we can see that. What I want to show is I'm going to run a tool called WCAT, which is Web Client Load Test Tool. So it's a tool that you basically can download from the community. It's posted on MSDN somewhere. And this tool will generate stress tests against the site. So it will create many, many clients, many, many threads, and try to get to do as many GET requests as it possibly can against the site. So we go in. And it takes a couple of seconds for the thing to warm up. But when it does, actually start to run, and you will be able to see requests coming in against the site. And so as you see right now, they were running the right test. Let me double check. I hit the wrong site. Yes, I did. I actually hit the last site I wanted to show. Sorry. This one. So we'll hit the right site this time. And basically what we're doing, we're creating a bunch of clients, and we are actually going and sending tons of requests against the server. This is the warm-up phase, and soon it will actually start, and you'll see some data coming in. And as you can see, I got some requests coming in here, and I'm sending about 59 requests per second that are hitting the site. It's in shared mode. This is the cumulative value. This is going to 62. If I go here and I kick the refresh, you will see that the start, if I actually go to the dashboard because we can see some more stuff. You can see the start starting to pick it up. You see the number of requests being updated. You see the total memory that is being a network egress that are being sending back is being increased. And as I refresh, you see more and more data coming in. And you can see here the total number of requests that I've made, and what is the average actually of the site that I'm running right now on the shirt. So as you can see, this is running on a single instance right now, so I can get about 30, give or take, requests per second. We've seen 40, but basically what happened is this is WebWCAT averaged the request or the responses across all the time that you're running. So you'll see more and more things running out. And as you can see, I can actually see something, I can see some sort of status. Instead of 200, I can see 301, and which is basically redirect. And what has happened, my guess, which I guess is the right thing, what happened most likely is that we have hit some quotas. And in this case, we could probably hit the CPU quota, or we had the egress quota. And the site itself right now, if you look at the site, I'll try to refresh. The site is being basically tell you that you have used too much quotas with this site in a very short time span. So we have sent, I don't know how many requests, we can actually look at the count. We have sent about 2,000 requests before the quota kicks in. And for those 2,000 requests in basically 90 seconds, the system decided that it's a little bit too much right now. So we're going to put you on hold for a couple of minutes. So the quota enforcement actually kicked in. OK. So to continue, we can actually return to that site later, and we'll see it actually being restored and being activated again. To continue, I would like to run the other part of the demo, which is basically a different site running the same application, DustBlog, which is a very simple blog application with no requirement for a database, so it's simplified. Actually, I can actually push more stress, more data into that. And this time, this is the plain vanilla. When you first install the app, this is what you get, nothing but a simple HTML page. So on that, what I want to do is want to go to, I think it's, I think this is the app, right? Yes. You've seen in here as well, I actually ran the test. And because I ran the other test before that, I actually got quite a lot of requests and got quite a lot of data coming in, which means that might be interesting to see if I'm going to hit the quota enforcement again. Yeah, as suspected. So this side has been quota enforcement as well because I've pulled the trigger too early on that. So one of the things to get out of jail is be able to go into the scale and switch from shared, which is used for quota, or which is basically we are being more strict in quotas, and move into reserved. And I'll accept the term, understanding. To move into reserve, and I can, let's say I'm going to run on a single core. Actually, before that, let's make that change as well. Switch into reserve instance, accept the terms. Let's say we start with one small core. We'll save that. We'll say, yeah. Save the change. And basically, one of the things I wanted to show you, but I mistakenly got my site into the wrong state, is I'm going to refresh the site. The site is going to basically be the run again and being moved to a different VM, into the dedicated VM, and we'll run. What I wanted to show you is that we can actually switch and change the scale during production when there is stress and load on the site. And what will happen is that basically no HTTP request made to the site will get lost during the process. So it is like smooth transition through that, and it's pretty cool and nice. Yes, question? Yeah, it took only 60 minutes. Hey, what's your name?
Peter.
Peter, thanks to Peter. Yes. So we're doing exactly the same thing behind the scenes. So whenever there is a change in the deployment configuration in terms of number of servers, so if we make decision, let's say you're running on a server and we need to do some maintenance on the server. So we will gracefully shut down the server. Part of that process is to drain it and then move everyone else to a different workload. So behind the scene, when you're increasing change in scale and doing all that, we are actually doing exactly the same thing. There is no administration interface that allows you to drain. Behind the scene, we are doing it whenever we need to do it. Oh, because we control that in terms of which we know exactly, the ARR know exactly which web server runs which part of your application. So when we make a decision to move you from one worker to other, we drain first and then move. But in terms specific, to answer your question, we didn't expose that in the management capability. So you as a user, when you update your application, we don't allow you to actually do that right now. But that would be interesting. So the site is running, or is running on a small instance. And let's go ahead and pick up the pace as far as timing as we have. Also, let's run the two. Okay, so we're running the loadout against the small instance, and what I will do is I will slowly increase the instance of the small, and I slowly increase it. Let me run the big one, and that's it. Let me just run the last test that I want to show you, because we're running short of time as well. Okay, so this rest basically go ahead and stress and put some very high load on the client, on my website, and you'll still will start with about 40 per second, give or take, and it will gradually increase. But what I can do at the same time is basically go ahead and make some changes to the scale and configuration. So I can go into the to the config, and let's say I want to change from small to medium, and I can actually run on, let's say, two instances instead of one. I'll save. And success. Basically, I go here, and what you'll see, slowly you'll see increase in the request per second. I'm saying slowly because against WCAT actually just average across all the run. So in soon I'm actually going to stop the run, and I'm going to restart again. This is probably a slight decrease as we change the site, and it takes time to provision. But what I want to show you basically that there are no errors happening or occurring during the transition phase, and the site is running. So if I'm going to hit the site from here, basically it will instantly come back. Okay, so what I want to do now, let's go ahead all the way, going to 3. Save that. We actually ran this in the beginning, in the first one, which was a kind of a mistake to run it in a shared environment, but you've seen the numbers. Then let me go ahead and run this again. So now basically we are running on we're running on 3 instances of large, and that will yield, let's see how many requests per second we can get out of that. And while we're waiting, I can actually go ahead and show you that you can see in the monitor basically that we data is coming in. This is the total number of requests that we have made. Which is close to 11,000, how much CPU that we have used at the same time, and so forth. And please know there are like zero errors that happen through the entire test that we have run. And as you see, as I refresh this, you get actually see in real time increasing the numbers, and we're just talking about number of seconds here, and look at how quickly the number of requests are being handled. And as you see, on 3 large, and probably I can run even you know, this is running from a single machine, so a proper test will actually be to run it across multiple machines. But even from my single machine, you can get to 253, 263 requests per second for your site, which is not that bad overall. Actually, you get quite good value for the number. And this will increase, obviously. Okay, so with that, let's see, what else do we have? Okay, so we've seen, I'll start and then Craig can probably come in and come finish. So we've seen Windows websites on Windows Azure. Craig showed some cool demos, show you how easy it is to start, to deploy, run multiple sites, and the free offer gives you like a free, you can use the free SQL Azure, you can use the MySQL. We showed PHP, WordPress, we showed the regular ASP.NET site, everything runs pretty cool, it's very easy. And then we went to the behind the scene and understand that this is basically a solid technology. It uses an existing infrastructure, it adds some more to the infrastructure. This is ready today. Basically, you guys can go ahead, try it. You can try it for free as part of the Windows Azure. There are 3 months it's free, and the website actually will survive for longer than that. If you want to use it internally with your own work and stuff like that, then it's definitely worth a shot in order to do that. So with that, Craig, anything else?
No, I think we got it. We'll just take some questions. We've got a few minutes left.
Okay, so thank you very much for spending the time.
Thank you. Do you mind stepping up to the mic just for the recording, sir?
I have a bunch of questions, but I will try to stick to the most important ones. First one, a very important one for me is SSL. What about SSL? Can I upload my certificates and use certificates for my website?
Yeah.
And this, maybe, want to get it?
Sure. So right now there is no SSL support for Windows Azure website. It's definitely high on our priority list and will be there, I would say shortly, but it's undefined how short is shortly.
Okay. And the second most important question is about the first request that hits a rather complex .NET site, for instance, a CMS or something like this. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of time that the jitter uses and things like that. Will we see that in cold sites too, that the first request is always very, very slow? I'm thinking about CMS sites based on Braco, for instance.
So the answer is yes and no. I would say it will be slower than a hot site. I'm not sure how very, very, very slow means. We have data that we will share broadly in terms of call activation site. We actually see cold activation site for like site like HP or even WordPress in the terms of about 2, 3, 5 seconds, give or take, for the first request. Obviously, there are some other more complex sites, like our complex CMS site, it takes up to like 8 or 7. But we never go, or we strive not to go beyond that. The 15th percentile and the 90 and 99 percentile, actually, all of them are below 10 seconds. So internally, this is the numbers that we have. Again, as Craig mentioned, this is a preview CTP, so there is no specific SLAs, but we move forward. So I will have another question in return to you. If you're running in reserved, for example, you probably most likely will not incur the cold site activation. I'm saying most likely because if you're stressed this reserve instance with many, many sites, then we will actually do that behind the scene. So first you can run on reserve. Would you consider other options in terms of payment options to have a shared but in a paid state? So you're able to pay for a shared instance, but we will allow you higher SLA or anything like that?
Definitely. In reserve mode, I would like to influence the recycling, the app, mm-hmm. The app recycling, NIAS, and things like that, so yep. to keep it live and responsive.
Got it. Yep. Okay. Sounds good.
Say, in the shared space, how many other tenants are you sharing the site with before you get your... So if you want to scale out more, is there like a ratio that you have in terms of how many other sites that you're also sharing that particular box with?
So yeah, we have the numbers, but I'm not sure that we are ready to disclose them publicly. Okay. But I would more be interested in why do you care if it's 10 or 100 or 1,000?
I was more curious than anything else.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I mean, we can talk more specifically if you want, but mm-hmm. do you understand your scenario or what in terms of question? But I'm not sharing the specific.
My other question is, I guess, can you contrast that with doing a application deploy using a web role, and so the websites that you have versus the just a traditional, you know, app deploy with a web role.
So the main difference between webs between yeah you have a slide somewhere right yeah good so the thing about the main technological difference between Windows Azure websites and a regular Windows Azure hosted service is that yeah besides you can read the thing is that one thing is a website and the Windows Azure website and you use web deploy and basically just a regular site. You don't have a lot of control over it. Where hosted service, you got a service modeling, and all of that. And in addition, you get control. You can RDP into the machine, you can control the start task of the machine, the shutdown, and so forth. And then obviously with greater power comes greater responsibility and complexity and so forth. So those are the two things that are kind of different. But if you want a website, or even a web application, which can scale and can have a lot of load. Windows Azure website is a great place to start. And if it's super successful and you actually need more control, then you have always capability to actually transfer your app into a hosted service.
Actually, now that that's up, I have a question on the continuous development, using Git. So to use Git, do I have to use the websites, or can I use Git deploy on just a regular Windows Azure Cloud Services thing?
For now, only website supports Git deployment, because there's a, you know, there's a process to actually create that Git repository in your website, and there's that, those deployment servers that actually front end that Git protocol, so it allows you to do that push. And we don't have that type of capability right now in the host and service world. So in the host and service world, you're still responsible to package your application and upload that to Windows Azure.
Okay. Thanks.
That's a good question. Thank you.
For cloud services, we had VIP swapping, like from production to staging and staging to production. We don't have that available in websites though now, right?
Right. So Windows Azure website right now doesn't support basically stage or VIP swap or the same capabilities. We are working on a couple of ideas of doing basically A/B switching or A/B testing for website. The lame solution is just to create another site and just switch, you know, the content.
Okay.
It's not that, I mean, it's a lame, but that's what they can offer you right now. But we are looking into do a more robust built-in way to do the staging or A/B switch or A/B testing.
So there is one thing, if you are using Git or using TFS, when you actually deploy your site, you get a nice, I can show you after a real quick Git deployment what that actually looks like. And after the fact, you can actually roll back to a previous deployment inside. Do you have something that shows that? So if it's not a VIP swap per se, but it allows you to roll back to a previous deployment very easily in the portal. You simply click on it and roll back. Yochai is going to try to show you that now. So if you're using either of those technologies, Git or TFS, you get sort of some of that capability. So that there's a panic button if you have a problem in production. Okay. You can go back.
Can I ask another question?
Yes, go ahead.
Well, we were using Azure PHP, the interoperability bridges.
Yes, sir.
Well, when uploading files, I mean, we were using WordPress, right?
Yeah.
So when uploading files, we had a problem. So we had to use File System Durability plugin in order to support the load balancing and stuff. So how does that work in websites now?
So basically with WordPress, it's a good question. Depends which plugin you're using, or in PHP in general, the session state are being managed on the local disk.
File System Durability plugin was an Azure plugin, actually.
Okay.
So there was no way out there to support to take the file system contents into Windows Azure storage and vice versa.
Yep. But so, as I said through the through the presentation, basically we abstract that. So we deploy in the web server that we have. When you're talking to your share, basically we took the kernel. We have a kernel driver that basically mimic those calls and do the abstraction and push it into the blob store. So we do all that behind the scenes for you. You can just work as a regular share. And just to follow up, this is basically, I have just one Git deployment. Maybe I should actually have more. But as you have some of those, you'll see many Git entries, and you can always basically roll back into the previous one or previouses that you have.
Yep.
The question, I had a question about what's the timeline for registering specific domains instead of for the websites?
So today you can actually go into configuration and you can actually go and you're able to go and change your host name to have a custom host name. But this option is only available if you go into reserved instance right now.
Okay.
So if you switch to reserved instance, you can add basically as many aliases to your website as you wish.
So that's only available on the reserved instances?
Today, yes.
So is there a plan for using the shared instance and having that feature?
So we haven't made any decision on that yet, but stay tuned. We might come up with something.
Okay, thank you.
We're really looking for feedback to try to understand, with this shared model that we have, how it can and should be used. Are people going to want to deploy production applications into the shared environment? And if so, they're going to want to map CNAMEs and all that kind of stuff. So we're really looking for people to go and take advantage of the offering and try it out and see what works and what doesn't work and what the limitations are, so we can tweak the code behind the scenes and also make business decisions around how we bring these different capabilities to market.
So it's more like aimed at kind of rapid prototyping for using that shared instance, and then maybe once you're...
I think in the model that we have that we've introduced as preview, we expect people to do prototyping and test and dev using shared instances, and then when it's time to go to full production, probably go to reserved instances. But there may be good cases for using shared instances with the quota limitations and things that are there. So it just depends on what you actually want to put there and understanding what those quota limitations are, and do those pose a problem for your business or not. So that's the issue that we need to resolve. Thank you for the question. It's a good question. All right, we are officially out of time. I'm happy to take some more questions, and Yohai and I will just come down and maybe step in the hallway, and we can continue the conversation. So thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.